coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody, and happy Tuesday night. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I am currently on the road, and right now, let's see, it is the 28th. It's the 28th, so I am actively moving from one city to another. Should just be getting into Orlando about right now. Getting ready to be there for 2 weeks, all kinds of good stuff. Joshua Shapiro is right down the road. Joshua Shapiro from the Center for the Advancement of Humanity, as well as Crystal Skull Explorers, the home and origin of my Geronimo skull, my crystal skull that sits right here on my desk with me every day. He is our guest in the second segment. We will be talking about crystal skulls, the knowledge they hold, the ancient technologies that could have helped build them. Could they have made crystal skulls in the times of our ancient forefathers? Things like that. That is the conversation that we will be having with our good friend Joshua Shapiro from Crystal Skull Explorers in our second part. In our first part, we have our friend from Liberty Hill right up the road, Daniel Duke. He is the author of Jesse James and the Lost Templar Treasure, as well as other books on the mysterious death of Jesse James. And it's interesting because that's one of those stories that you hear in history class, things like that, that are very supposedly cut and dry, like the Kennedy assassination. There was Kennedy on television going down the road, and all of a sudden, a single guy shoots him. Well, you think it's a single guy. We know Kennedy died, but there's a lot of curious information when you really start digging into Jesse James and the death of Jesse James. And did Jesse James live beyond the years that we believe? Did Jesse James move to Texas, fake his own death, move here, and carry on his life and hide Templar treasures? Daniel Duke, welcome back to the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on. It's an honor.
I love our conversations, both on and off air. Like, we met to do this pre-record and have been talking for about 40 minutes before we ever even hit record. it's great, and it's fun, and the adventure that you have had in your life, the paths that this story has led you down is absolutely awesome and amazing. Yeah. And it's one of those that's quite literally, in some moments, the stuff of spy novels, man. To the fact of when you and your mother were going to the state archives, you had people following you while you were researching this information. You have had active threats, to the point that the FBI has had to get involved because of your research into the death of Jesse James. You have had active, like, pretty much cease and desists from the town that claims the death of Jesse James.
That's true. It's been a wild ride, to say the least. Actually, that's an understatement. So.
Well, let's start getting into it real quick. How did you first come to find out that you were blood relative of Jesse James and related to Jesse James to begin with?
Well, that story was handed down by the family, through the family. My mom grew up hearing it, you know, and her dad grew up hearing the same thing. It was, you know, every time there's a family holiday or get together, that ended up being one of the big parts of the conversation. And mom decided, you know, everybody's like, yeah, he was Jesse James. He faked his death and died in an old age in Blevins, Texas. And that was the family story. And you kind of grow up just thinking of it for, you know, just taking it for granted. Why would they make that up? And then mom, she decided in the 90s, well, she decided probably early 90s to start researching that. She wanted to find out which was true. The traditional story, historically or traditionally accepted history on Jesse James, or was our family story the truth? And so she started researching, a lot of research, which led to the, things like going to the state archives, being followed and warned, things like that. But she proved with photographs, she found all the evidence, ended up finding more evidence than the James Farman Museum in Missouri had. They were, up until that time, the end all be all of Jesse James history. And then when Mom came out with it and her story hit Texas Monthly Magazine, I think in 98, and then she kept researching further. She never stopped until she passed away in 2015. But she proved with photographs, and not just the photograph, it wasn't just like, look, this photo looks like that guy. We've seen some hoaxers try to morph a photo of their relative into Jesse James and claim that was it. I thought that you can do that for, you can get free photo programs and do stuff like that. That proves nothing. We went to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Austin Police Department, the Photographic Forensic Analysis Lab, and Visionics, who was later bought out by another company. They were world leaders in facial recognition technology. Those three different organizations verified that our family photos of Jesse and his other family members matched. And so, we had that, but DNA seems to be the end all be all these days anyway, until science comes up with another way. So there was a lady, and I'm getting way ahead of myself. There's a lot more between everything I'm saying, but there was a lady who was a direct descendant of the James family through, who carried the same mitochondrial DNA. And mitochondrial DNA is passed down from through the females. Yep. Like if your mom, you have your mom's DNA, but because you have her mitochondrial DNA, but because you're a male, you can't pass that to your children. They'll get the other DNA, but not mitochondrial. So that was what the big test was back in 1995 when they hired the James Farman Museum hired Professor James E. Starrs. He wasn't a doctor. He was a professor of law. I don't know why they hired him to do a forensic investigation, but he dug up the grave in Kearney, Missouri, found multiple bodies, and he was trying to get some kind of good sample of DNA, mitochondrial DNA from the grave. Couldn't get it. He presented it as that in his final report, which took him forever to publish. But he presented it as coming from the grave, but it didn't come from the grave. It came from a Tupperware bowl that was kept at the museum for years.
Oh, wow.
And the contents of which were dug up by a curator of the museum in 1978. He found hog bones, dog bones, and a human tooth and a couple of other bones. And he kept them in a Tupperware bowl and would hand them out to friends and they'd pass it around. So it's already contaminated from other people just handling it. They ended up putting that in the control of that was in the hands of the James Farman Museum. And their attorney, Stephen Caruso, was the one who had access to it. He told my mother and I face to face, he was against that exhumation in 95. They ran it like a circus. And in his words, it was a tawdry sideshow. They mishandled everything. And he said he was ordered. Long story short, James E. Starrs, the professor of law who was doing a forensic dig, he got a court order to get Caruso, who used to be the Clay County attorney, their attorney. They ordered him to hand over the tooth and Jesse's hair. He told us in person, he pulled the hair from John Hartman's head, who was the Clay County Parks director. And he submitted that as the hair they wanted. He said, he didn't give us details, but he said, I guarantee you the tooth had similar origins. And he kind of laughed. And he said, I didn't like the way they were doing it. And I wasn't going to bow to their orders. So he didn't. They tested a tooth that didn't belong to anybody. It wasn't even the tooth from the Tupperware bowl. And then they tested the hair from John Hartman, and on their documentary claimed that that was definitely Jesse's hair because it was known that Jesse dyed his hair before robberies and this had traces of dye in it, which Stephen Caruso got a kick out of because his buddy John Hartman, whose hair it was, he was giving him a hard time about dyeing his hair. But so they claimed that there was no living descendant who had that mitochondrial DNA. Yet every historian knows there was a woman named Sue Laura Hale, who was a direct female descendant from Zerelda James. That was Jesse and Frank's mother. Sue Laura Hale was living in California. She was in her early 90s, and mom contacted her and got permission. The woman, Miss Hale, went to her doctor. They took a sample of blood, submitted it through strict chain of custody to our DNA guy in San Antonio. And he tested that against mom and proved there is a definite relationship. But he went further and told us, for something like this to stand up in court, you're going to have to exhume everybody from my mother, you know, like her dad, her grandmother, and then finally Jesse's grave. So you've got all your I's dotted and your T's crossed. But as it stands right now, we've got DNA proof that there's a relationship on top of all the census death records. His diary mentioning basic with his own signature that says Jesse James, yeah. Says J James and JWJ in different places in his diary, and known gang members, date robberies they did. We've got more proof than the historians have ever dreamed of having.
And you know, this is really one of the, and even the photographic evidence, once again, that has been examined and examined and examined, to show the fact that, yeah, that is literally Jesse James standing at the funeral of himself.
Yeah, his own funeral. And I remember we'd heard stories of this. There were even, there was a couple of old news articles back in 1882 talking about the tall stranger. Yeah, you know, then nobody knew who he was. And it was Jesse. And we, you know, we thought, wow, that would be wild. And I wished my mom could have seen the photo. She died in 2015. And I believe my sister found that photo in 2016 or 17. Don't quote me on the date, but it was after our mother had passed. And it just, that blew our mind. We used to sit around laughing. You know, can you imagine him being at his own funeral? That doesn't even make sense. Seems way too risky when everybody was there, the Pinkertons, law enforcement. And then you remember the Pinkertons didn't even, and they were the cream of the crop back then. They had no clue as to what Jesse looked like. Nobody had an accurate description. So it was easy for him to go to his own funeral. It's just when Teresa discovered the photo, we were just blown away. I mean, that was like the greatest photo we could have ever dreamed of having.
Yeah. And it once again really sets the stage for the questions of why. This is one of and once again, one of those that why people following you? Why people warning you against things at the records building here at the state records building? You know, we regularly at least three times a year have Catherine Children on from the Shakespeare Oxford Fellowship, and the idea of Shakespeare that we know never wrote Jack. There is somebody else who is getting the credit, this cabbage it's farmer like who could barely put an X on a piece of paper, was not the dude that penned all these works, you know. And what's funny is that absolutely does not change the physics of our world, Daniel. It does not change what anybody's papers were written about. It doesn't grandly change the history of humanity. All it does is maybe give the credit to the person who actually wrote all the stuff. That's all it does.
Why is it so important? That always we had the same question.
And with Jesse faces death.
Yeah. So what? Why does that warrant people following us? Why does it warrant a lot of the stuff, the death threats we've had? And, you know, all of that, it doesn't make sense. We were in awe that just research into an Old West outlaw would stir up that much trouble.
And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Here's a big reason why. And especially whenever you go into the history books and you start looking at the time and era that we're talking about. There was a lot of hawking going on, man. There was a lot of street hawking. There was a lot of sideshow hawking.
Yeah.
Back in those days. And I'm about to pop something up right now, folks. This is from Walking Tourists that I'm popping up. Step right up. See Jesse James's coffin, the famous ice coffin and more. This is just to go see the coffin.
Yeah. Just to see the coffin.
There's an entire town whose almost main income is the fact that they are the town that Jesse James was shot in. Come see the house. Come see the house where it took place.
Another story.
You know, but that's what the story is. That's what the books say.
I know it ties around money. Money is a big thing. You know, like you just said, that their entire economy rests on Jesse James. And they get a lot of tourism from around the globe every year. Back in 99, I think it was 98 or 99, we dug up a number from somewhere. The James Farm and Museum in back then was bringing in $7 million a year on average. For a tiny little dot on the map town, that's a lot of money. That was like their biggest source of income.
Yeah. And
to mention hotels,
restaurants. St. Joseph, Missouri is where that is.
And St. Joe, where the house where they claimed he got shot, it's the same thing. It's a kind of an economically depressed looking town. It's a nice town. I'm not dissing it.
Absolutely not.
They need the money. Well, and that brings in a lot.
And that's just it, you know. And the example that I normally give is Fred's Lounge. I'm a Cajun. My family is from Mamou. Literally, right? One red light. Right underneath the raccoon's tail, my friend, is Mamou. But Fred's Lounge is there. Fred's Lounge has a nice plaque on the side where it is the home of Cajun music. It is quite literally where Cajun music started, is this place. I mean, to the point that it's open one day a week, only till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And reams for probably about an hour and a half. You can listen to the motorcycles of people coming in off the freeway to this tiny little town during Mardi Gras. This tiny little town goes from a sleepy town of, like, I think my cousin graduated with like 60 other people. There'll be 30,000 people in that town for Mardi Gras. There are businesses on that main drag that are only open for the week prior and the week of Mardi Gras. They make all their money during that time.
Yeah.
So you remove Fred's Lounge. You say, oops, sorry, Cajun music didn't start there. What happens to the Mardi Gras? A lot of people lose their livelihoods, you know. So are you willing to skip over that fact? Are you willing to just kind of shrug away the fact that there's, and it's not just books by you, buddy. You just happen to be the one who's related to Jesse James writing the books. There's more than one person that has put literature out on the fact that Jesse James did not die the way the history books say, and that he skittered away and lived the rest of his life here in the Lone Star State.
That's true. We're the only ones who have it right, though. And I don't mean to sound arrogant, but it's true.
No.
There's a lot of other hoaxers. J. Frank Dalton was the biggest hoaxer.
Yep.
But at the same time, they have evidence. And J. Frank Dalton, while he wasn't Jesse James, had a lot of info on the treasures that a normal person wouldn't have known.
As in what? Let's get into that for a minute, because there was a point where you actively found a treasure map.
Yeah. One passed down through the family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but that one was hard to read. It didn't give any topographical location. We knew it was in Blevins, Texas, but we didn't know where. A typical map, like you know, growing up watching pirate movies, think X marked the spot and you go this far from the old oak tree. It was nothing like that. It was just a geometrical symbol with a weird drawing of what looked like a man's face. And it was a lot of codes and diagram and just dashed lines and straight lines, solid lines, with code. Some of the code was easy to break. Some of it is, it seems impossible, but we didn't know. You know, I thought, okay, it's a treasure map, but where do you start? We had no clue. Nobody had a clue. And, that's when I got into researching everything. The guy, there was two men who broke that for me, who helped me crack that code. One was a former attorney general for the state of Texas, Wagner Carr, who was also mixed up in the JFK stuff. He was on the Warren Commission. That's a weird story in itself. Anyway, he sent his driver out to show my mother and I where three large catches were recovered. And then there was a man named George Roaming, who was a World War II vet. He was a 32nd degree Freemason. He contacted us when he was a kid. Jesse was an old man still alive. And Jesse swore George to an oath when he was like 10 to 12 years old. And that's when George went out with Jesse, helped him move 700 bars of gold. They buried 680 bars, each weighing approximately 15 pounds. So George drew a map. It was about a year and a half before he died. He drew a map for my mother and I, told us exactly where it was, and it's on Fort Hood Military Reservation. So we weren't going to get that. We weren't even, you know, that's
absolutely
not. I would never attempt that. Good way to end up in prison for life or dead. but the good thing about that, I took Wagner Carr's three locations that he showed us and George's location, his firsthand account, and it fit perfectly on a template. The template I'm mentioning came from J. Frank Dalton. He was the guy who kind of blew that open. There were other people who had it, but it's called the Knights of the Golden Circle treasure template. You can Google that and you'll find the template. It's a really crude looking template, but it's got very deep esoteric and historical significance. It goes way back beyond Old West Outlaws. So I got the template. I'd seen the template off and on just doing the research. Knights of the Golden Circle. There's no proof Jesse was a member of it, but it wouldn't shock me if he was. They were extremely secretive. So there's that template. It never had a scale, dimensions, and it was just that drawing. And I thought, how do you use this? Even with one known location, it's hard to find a scale. You'd have to know where at least two were to make it work. When I had Wagner Carr's three locations in George's, it fit perfectly with the template. All I had to do was make a transparency of the template, overlay it on Google Earth, and everything fell in line.
Wow.
And then I worked further from that. It's not just one template. It's a grid of templates. I started working with that, worked my way out, overlaying, with a grid of overlays over the entire state of Texas, went further. I've got about half of America on there. The problem with doing the entire country is the curvature of the earth and the way that it kind of distorts the template when you get too far east or west from it. But make a long story short, that template turned into a grid system. I knew the dimensions. I wanted to know, why the dimensions? Who's responsible for this? I'm constantly curious about everything. So I kept researching that, and that's what led me down the rabbit hole of secret societies and a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've got part of the stuff up right now from the book talking about the Tree of Life and how the connections in the Tree of Life match up with the ratios inside of the template and everything else. And it's absolutely fascinating. And we just recently had Jason Quitt on about how literally these concepts of Yasod, everything else from ancient Hebrew and from Kabbalah tie into so many things and are carried forth. Like you yourself are a Mason. These teachings and truths and even the geometric truths of them are carried forth even to this day in those teachings.
Yeah. And after all the research I'd done, I won't get into that. I probably shouldn't. But what you're saying is exactly right. And it wasn't just Freemasonry. It's a lot of different mystic traditions from the Sufi traditions.
Yep. Just about all of them.
Jewish traditions. It ties in with Indra's net, which has, you know, Indra's net. Indra is I think she's worshipped by the Hindus or at least honored, and also Buddhists. And the funny thing is Indra's net is also shown on Aleister Crowley's tarot deck. I think it was the Queen card. Don't quote me on that. But there's a lady holding a net, and it looks just like Indra's net. That's basically the veil template that I discovered. It goes back through Freemasonry, and that is where, we were talking about the threats and the weird things and that had happened. I don't think it dealt so much with the James Farman Museum or the money it could potentially cost to St. Joseph Museum, the city of St. Joseph, or Kearney, Missouri. I think it ties in more with the treasures and the secret societies and government officials and families who are very powerful, who are tied in with all of the above.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very much the warning that was given to you. Let's get into the situation that happened where you were actively followed at the state archives and told you were being followed.
Yeah, that one still amazes me. I look back on it and I laugh. At the time, I wasn't laughing. I thought, what the hell? But you go from growing up in a small town in Central Texas, and you're researching your ancestor who was an outlaw, an Old West outlaw. And you're, in our opinion anyway, I thought, okay, this is really cool. End of story. You know, it's really cool. And then you start finding out more things. But this was before I'd even discovered the treasure template. Mom and I would take her down to the state archives in Austin. And we would go just pouring through birth certificates, death certificates, census records, all of that, connecting the dots. Who was his neighbor?
Sure.
Who were these people? People who were mentioned in his diary. We would research them. And suddenly, you know, we walk in one day and the librarian at the time, his name was David Baskins. He was the head librarian there at the archives. We always signed in when we walked in. There was a big book. You sign your name, date, time, all that. We walk in one day and he walked over real quick and under his breath said, don't sign the book. And Mom said, okay, why? And he just said, don't sign it. They're watching. And he turned around and walked off. And I looked at Mom like, what? Who's watching? And this is weird. And we just kind of shook our head like, okay, this is odd. We sit down at the table and we notice an old man watching us. And there was a young guy who kept coming up to his table and then he'd run off again with microfiche, just scrolling through the microfiche really fast. And we weren't approached that day. It was on another trip like this. We came back. I think it was the third trip after that. We were at the archives. There's those same two guys, the old guy, the young guy. David Baskins never mentioned it again. We just made sure we didn't sign the book. They were there watching, and the old man started grinning, and he walked over and introduced himself. And his name was Jay Harrison. He was a huge, he was a real big researcher into the JFK stuff. That's all he would say. And then the other guy, the young guy, came up and introduced himself as Jeff Adams. I'm a house painter. And I thought, okay, that's cool. Well, the second meeting we had with them at the archives, like a week later, Jeff Adams fessed up and said, I'm not a house painter. I'm a researcher for the Texas State Bar. And I thought, what? Why are y'all interested in this? And Mom asked them, why are you interested in this? And he said, you can mention anything. He said, you can prove who your great-grandfather was. Just don't mention any names that tie in with the Texas power structure. And I looked at Mom and she looked at him and said, well, who's the Texas power structure? And he just smirked and said, oh, you'll find out. no one has ever come to us and said, hey, we're part of the Texas power structure. How you doing? You know, that's what we expected. But he just, and that was pretty much it. I remember years later when the movie about Jimmy Hoffa came out with De Niro and Joe Pesci, De Niro's character was saying he would introduce himself as a house painter. And I thought, oh my God, is that what the guy was saying? It just, I don't know if that's what he was saying.
Interesting.
But it made me wonder, was he a hitman?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, and you know, what I find more than anything interesting is the fact that this meeting happened not once, but twice. And this happened before you were on the trail of treasure. Before you, which in and of itself can be a dangerous prospect, you know, like there's a reason why treasure hunters keep mum about things frequently.
Most treasure hunters know you're exactly right. If you find something, keep your damn mouth shut.
Keep your mouth shut.
Tell nobody. Yeah, you're going to be red flagged forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, like it will become Indiana Jones real quick, dude. Like there will be people who start following you and shadowing you and all kinds of things start happening once, especially once you're onto something that like on the scale of this, on the scale of something like that changes not only history, but power structures, changes, you know, who in the Texas legislature at the time knew that this famous outlaw was hiding himself. And it was shortly after Texas became a state, you know,
like you'd said, this was before they were warning us before I'd ever gotten, you know, any clues on the treasure.
Yeah.
So whose name's in his diary? What connections was Jesse involved with?
Exactly.
That warranted. I mean, all those guys are dead, long dead.
Yeah.
So who does that connect with that affects our power structure to this day?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. To the point of don't let somebody know that their grandfather was aware of the fact that this known criminal came into the state of Texas and helped hide it. And that would be the bigger question is the helping hide it.
Yeah.
You know, the fact of they apparently knew that he had faked his death or that he had come into the state and were willing to keep their mouths shut. Now, granted, once again, Texas was burgeoning as a state. We were very new still. It was just past the point of people coming here to start anew because, well, it wasn't Mexico and it wasn't the United States.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
You could come here and you could start something new and not be a wanted criminal anymore. You know, things like that.
I mean, there was a saying back then, people would write, people would send postcards back to their family that said GTT, gone to Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was a new start for a whole lot of people.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was very much a new start for Jesse James, apparently.
Yeah. And in a way, it reminds me of Belize in the 1950s through the 70s. If you were a mob guy and you were on the run, you could disappear down to Belize and for $50,000 in a bank account, they'd give you a new passport and a new identity.
Yeah, Belize or Costa Rica. Yeah.
Yeah. Belize and I think Costa Rica was in the same, basically the same thing.
Yeah.
They disappear down there, get a new life and then come back later.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just it. That's what you kind of have to wonder about because, it is not proven that Jesse James was in the Knights of the Golden Circle. But with his position that he had in the military and with what he did, especially with what he did in the military, because
Quantrell's guerrillas, what they did fell perfectly in line with the goals of the Knights of the Golden Circle during the Civil War.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a strong, you know, a big finger pointing at it. There's just no known evidence.
Yeah.
Or none that we can find yet. You know, I always tell people, if you can prove it, it wouldn't shock me. I just need proof before I can come out and say he was definitely a member. I'm not going to do that until I see proof. He was also a member of a group called the Knights of Labor. And they were responsible for creating Labor Day. So it just seemed odd to me that Jesse would be a Freemason and a Knight of Labor. I don't know what that was about.
Well, there were a lot of groups like that. Like Knights of Columbus got started because Catholic men could not get jobs in some places, and because Catholic men could not get life insurance. It's why the Knights of Columbus started, straight up.
That's amazing.
And that's what we're about. We have one of the best, not to go on a Knights of Columbus spiel, but we do have like straight up one of the best life insurance plans around. It's amazing. But it was started, all these fraternal brotherhoods started because somehow or another, in some way, there was a part of the community that ousted them in some way, or they were belonging to another group, like the Masons, what have you, that where society wouldn't let these people mingle because of religious background or what have you, they could commingle inside of these doors for common purpose and common use. And for the building of community and the building of business beyond religious bounds.
Yeah. You know, the Woodman, that's another group they started.
I've got Woodman's insurance. I was a Shriner's kid. I was a kid that went to Shriner's Hospital and got help when I was a younger kid, you know? So like without people like the Shriners, there are hospitals out there that treat children every single day. Because of the Shriners, these groups were created, because of these needs within communities. And when you start looking at something like the Knights of the Golden Circle, who, you know, were, let's just say, according to legend anyway, a secret society in a different way, very much more we're going to put things away and the South will rise again.
Exactly.
To the point of the hypotheses reaching to the Knights of the Golden Circle. We're trying to team up with Santa Anna. All kinds of things.
They wanted to create a slavery empire based on agriculture, you know, and they wanted to take everything from the northern portion of South America, all of Central America, and the entire south of the U.S., including Texas, and make Havana, Cuba, their headquarters, their capital.
Yeah, it was basically the fact of, okay, well, we lost the Civil War, so you can keep everything above the Mason-Dixon, and we'll take everything below that, all the way down.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine how that, I'm not glorifying it by any means. I mean, they were planning, according to what I've read, they were planning on using slave labor to make it work.
Which
to me was that was in a time when the world was sick of slavery.
Yeah.
I don't know how they would have gotten by like that, but just a country in that location, they would have been an agricultural powerhouse.
Yeah, it would have been, it really is the stuff of science fiction.
It's some madman came up with an idea and a lot of guys were like, yeah, plus, you know, they just lost the Civil War. So I'm sure more people came in wanting the South to rise. It reminds me of two rival football teams. The losing side always wants a rematch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, even to the point of the work of Quantrell's Raiders and what they did, and the fact of their job was very much the guerrilla warfare, the go blow up rail lines, go hold up gold trains to keep Union soldiers from getting paid.
At the end of the war, Shelby and his men, a lot of Confederates were ready to go fight for Maximilian, Emperor Maximilian.
Yep.
And, it's rumored that Maximilian was a Mason. That goes into a whole different story, but they were actively looking to make their dream happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is so much, though, geopolitically involved with the American Civil War, Daniel. You start breaking it down, when you start looking at the fact of, and this is something that a lot of people just do not realize. When you start looking, there was a great show, Manhunt, that just happened on Apple TV that goes through the whole Mary Surratt issue, the whole John Wilkes Booth arc, and everything. It really, really does a great job. And it reminds you of the fact of, hey, don't forget, there were people laundering Confederate gold in Canada.
Yeah.
Canada. Well, like, Canadian banks were laundering the gold of the Confederacy right directly over the Union
troops. Guess who was in Canada after Abe Lincoln got shot? Albert Pike.
Yeah.
He spent several years, he hid out in Canada. So
yep.
And then later comes back and they put a statue of him in DC.
Yeah.
I thought that was that the whole story.
Yeah, like
that's a wild story in itself.
The different geopolitical countries that backed the North and the South. And some of them backed both.
Yeah, the UK backed the South. and there were a lot of Confederate higher ups who went to the UK during the war.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. They went over there on diplomatic mission and all kinds of things.
It was a lot bigger than people, you know, because when you're in school, usually all you hear is, they had slaves. The North didn't like it. Yeah. They went to war and the North won. End of story. Let's move on.
That's a good chunk of the story. Don't get me wrong. Like, that's a good 65% of the story.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. But the details, the devil's in the details, and a lot of interesting stories lie in those details.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
it's just. Well, yeah. And well, just going from like our story, I'm looking, we're trying to prove who our great, great grandfather was. We prove it. We're warned just on that alone. People telling us the guy's telling us not to talk about the Texas power structure. Then out of the blue, another guy introduces himself. He's from a completely different group. And I've sworn I won't say his name. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I'll just say I have a great respect for people like that. Anyway, he'll tell us things that are going to happen days before you see it on the news. Stuff like that. But he told us, he said, no, you can go ahead and talk about the names in the diary, the names who may or may not tie in with the Texas power structure. Go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah.
And so we did, and nothing happened. It's like that group trumped the other group that was originally giving us warnings. And I thought, my God, if that group's that powerful, who's this other guy a part of? And he's given us hints through the years, but we've given our word we wouldn't say anything about that, so I'm not gonna divulge that. I don't know where I'm going with that.
It's one of those things of it's absolutely remarkable to know that during your research of this, you were warned to stay away from it. Once again, far before any treasure ever became involved, far before any gold, ever, at least from your end, ever became involved. That doesn't mean that large hoards of gold weren't uncovered in Texas at one point.
Fairly recently.
Pretty recently.
Yeah.
And
I was a kid when one of them was one was right over the just down the road in Georgetown. It's 12 miles from me. It's not probably about the same distance from you. And that was in 89, I believe. That one, according to Wagner Carr, former attorney general for the state of Texas. It just blows my mind that we're talking to that, a man of that position, talking about Jesse James treasures. And he sends his driver to show us exactly where they were taken out of the ground. It was several 18-wheelers coming and going. with the Texas Rangers watching over the site while it was recovered. I said, well, where did it end up? And I knew he wasn't going to tell me. He just looked away and kept talking about something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't going to tell me where it ended. I had to ask, but I didn't expect an answer. But, you know, it's just amazing that happened. And then tracing the treasures and their origins, that led me down thousands of rabbit holes. And I think, and I asked a 33rd degree Mason, I said, he knew all about the story. He's passed away since, but his name was Dr. Case Bolt. He was in Liberty Hill. He knew all about the story, and he was at our dinner before I became a Mason. He tied in the story of the gold I'm talking about to the Templar and stuff that, you know, all the legends that surround them. Yeah. He was real big into that. Talking to him, and I don't know why I brought him up. This is the point where it's like a million different strings are attached to this story, and I have to fight to stay on topic.
There's a million strings connected to all of these things when it comes to KGC, when it comes to Masons, when it comes to Templars, when it comes to all these things. And yes, there is a large vat of stories, let's just say.
And like this treasure, the same treasure that connected Jesse, that Jesse was connected with and active in taking and burying a lot of it, it ties in with treasures that Marie Bauer Hall, Manly Palmer Hall, the famous 33rd who wrote all, you know, the secret teachings of the New Age and things like that, the secret destiny of America. I'm sure you're familiar with Manly Palmer Hall, but his wife, Marie Bauer Hall, discovered the Bruton Vault. It's a treasure that includes traditional treasures and a treasure of knowledge that she claimed would shake the foundations of modern history.
Yeah.
That's in Williamsburg, Virginia. This treasure ties in directly with that. And not only that, you had mentioned Shakespeare earlier.
Yeah.
She found out about that treasure. She discovered the Bruton Vault by decoding messages or hidden messages in the works of Shakespeare and Francis Bacon.
Yeah.
And I thought, my God, I'm just trying to illustrate how you start from an old West outlaw, me and my mom, you know, people just grew up normal people in Central Texas, happened to be descended from an outlaw. The outlaw ties in with Shakespearean, you know, treasures that have ties to Shakespeare. It's just very odd. Yeah. In Grandpa's diary, we call him Grandpa, Jesse's diary, he mentions going on a robbing spree. They were on a robbing spree. They went through, they ended up in Shreveport, got on a riverboat, went down to Natchitoches. I always say that wrong, but Natchitoches or Natchitoches. Anyway, they went there during the robbing spree. They stayed the night at a man's house. The man was named Gervais Fontenot. And I thought, okay, so here's another name I need to research. Start researching him. He was a retired U.S. Marshal. I thought, why is the James Gang staying the night at the home of a retired U.S. Marshal? That just seems counterintuitive in a way.
Sure.
But I started doing more research on Gervais, found his family tree. His family's taking care of all of that, and it was very well documented. He was the nephew of Jean Lafitte, the pirate. So I start researching Jean Lafitte more. Jean Lafitte. Jean Lafitte had Masonic communications with Andrew Jackson.
Yep.
When they were fighting the English in New Orleans. And I thought, okay, wait, this is weird. It blew my mind at first. And now it just makes, you know, I'm kind of used to it, but you can't have Masonic communications unless both parties are Freemasons.
And know the code. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that proves Jean Lafitte was also a Freemason, just like Jesse was, just like Andrew Jackson.
Yep.
And it to me illustrates a network of not just Freemasonry, but also outlaws and multiple other groups under a large umbrella.
Yep. And Jean Lafitte famously helped defend the port of Galveston.
Yeah. I mean, he helped save the U.S.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that was taken care of, they ran him out. But,
well, you know, pirates.
That was the, what did they call it? Campeachy. I think that was the name of his on Galveston Island.
Yeah.
He torched the U.S. Navy ship, showed up, and they were basically letting him know, you got to leave now. He torched the town, loaded up his ships, and took off.
Yep. Yep. And as you get prepared to cross from the mainland over to the Galveston Causeway, off to the side, there's a little state marker. And that is actually showing where Jean Lafitte defended the port.
That was amazing.
Yeah. And it's such a small marker. It's hilarious that it's just like under a bridge now. You know?
Yeah, that depresses me. I think things like that need to be highlighted much better.
Well, and even things like this, you know, the problem is, Dan, we get very attached to our histories. We get very attached to our nostalgia. Much like anybody who comes to a family reunion and says,
yeah,
I had a bad experience with Uncle Chuck when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Maybe not everybody's into that news about Uncle Chuck.
You know, that reminds me.
Because we've all had an idea about Uncle Chuck in our head for a long time, you know, and now there's something about Uncle Chuck that really doesn't jibe and that we can't accept. You know, and it's hard, and sometimes it's easier to tell the person that's saying I had a bad time with Uncle Chuck that they're crazy for thinking that they had a bad time with Uncle Chuck than it is to accept the bad time with Uncle Chuck.
That's true. That reminds me of a story. I remember telling my dad, this was in the early 90s, I think. I said, did you know there's reports that the U.S. government is altering the weather? Or they're experimenting with altering the weather for use over battlefields and stuff. And he got mad. It made my dad mad. Yeah. He got mad at me. He didn't want to hear that news. He didn't believe it. It made him furious. And then Dan Rather came on. I think it was 2 days later. There was a report. Dan Rather talked about it on the evening news about the U.S. government, you know, altering weather.
Yeah.
And I said, there it is, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't deny it because the TV told him.
Well,
told him, and it was believable.
That's just it. That's just it. Is we have been sold these histories. We've been told these histories. These are the histories that we hold near and dear. These are the things. It's like finding out that, you know, Davy Crockett came to the Alamo because everybody was kind of tired of him being their congressman. You know, like you want to consider the Disney version, Coonskin Catman coming on down, fighting for the right thing. He was just trying to get away from his constituents that were like, hey, man, we're tired of your ramrod attitude about things, which I love his ramrod attitude. I think we need to go back to the days of people like Old Hickory. Who got their name because they were willing to throttle their fellow senators with their hickory walking stick until they listened. I wish we'd go back to that, dude.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, yeah, and Jim Bowie. I mean, Disney movies, the Disney shows, they altered our perception.
That's
what we grew up with.
That's
what we thought the truth was.
And
then you read later about Jim Bowie. He loved knife fighting, and he got in a lot of weird knife
fights. And he actively, like cut a dude's belly open and had to kind of get out of town.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and he would strap his hand to another man's hand.
Yeah.
And they would fight in a dark room to the death.
Yeah.
I thought it's like an imaginative serial killer in ways.
Well, it was Indian style knife fighting. And it was, forget challenging you to a duel at 50 paces. Let's see what you really got.
Let's get really down and dirty about it. But at the same time, that's the kind of people you needed to fight a war.
The thing is, why lose that history? Why whitewash it?
Exactly.
Why whitewash it?
Exactly.
You know,
it's like I personally think it's because they do that in order to steer society in whatever way they want them to go.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just it, you know, is the idea of, like we were saying at the beginning, what's sexy, what sells, sadly.
That's true.
The story, I mean, nobody, it's never sexy when somebody has outwitted everybody, faked their own death and moved somewhere else, lived happily ever after. That's not sexy. That's not sexy.
They want the Robin Hood, story shot by one of his own men, betrayed. Yep. William Wallace.
Robin Hood being betrayed and shot in the back of the head by one of his own guys.
A tragic story.
For 30 pieces of silver.
Yeah.
Sells a whole lot better. And continues to sell better.
For some reason, it's more believable. Even though it's not the truth, it's easier. I guess it's more easily digested by people than telling them the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, precisely. And once again, there's the idea of, well, we did exhume the body. Yes. In a very horrible, botched way. There was some kind of exhumation done, but not a forensic one.
And the funny thing is, he was a much more amazing man in truth than he was in the legends.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess, well, and there's a lot of people, there's a large crowd of people who like to think of him and guys like him as crazy psychopaths. And they actually weren't. I mean, he didn't go looking to kill people. No. If in a robbery, he warned, you know, they'd tell people there was a couple of cases where he did shoot people without asking because of the war. He, you know, like one of the bank robberies that put him on the map as a brutal killer. He walked into a bank. He saw the teller and he thought the teller was a man who killed one of his friends. He didn't ask questions. He just drew his gun and shot him in the head right there.
Yeah.
And then later on found out he shot the wrong guy.
But
there's a lot more to him than what him and others.
Absolutely.
That people know.
Absolutely. And that's just it. There's always more to history. There's always more that we uncover later. And the fact is, we have to be willing to let our paradigms go. We have to be willing to say that what we have known may have been misled, you know, in no less form or fashion than the Fiji mermaid was on the front of a newspaper too.
Yeah.
You know, but we know that was fake.
Yeah.
And we're willing to admit it. We're willing to admit that we were all duped by it, you know?
Yeah.
So we got to be ready for that. Dan, I want to always thank you for coming on the show. We always have a great conversation, and this is a fascinating topic to me to explore, the idea of how history leaks into the modern world and how unchanged history can be a problem. You know, we have to be willing to allow new bodies of evidence, so to speak, to come to light. So thank you so much for bringing those bodies of evidence to light. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Anytime. Let everybody know where they can go to keep up with your latest. I know you're working on a new book, all kinds of things, but let everybody know where they can go to keep up with you, all that kind of good stuff.
You can find my books on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, my publisher, Inner Traditions. If you go to Inner Traditions, just, or any of the sites, you can type in Daniel J. Duke and you'll find my books. I've got two websites up right now. One is, I'm starting to forget. Oh, authordanduke.com. My email is the opposite and I always get those two mixed up. I don't know why I did that. But anyway, authordanduke.com, or you can go to outlawjessejames.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, as always, for everything that you do. Thank you so much, as always, for coming on the show, sharing your stories and the wealth of knowledge that you have in this area.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And anytime you want, I'm happy to come back.
Awesome. Well, hold the line real quick while we close things out for this segment. While you are online checking out everything from Daniel Duke, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is where you can find all of our content. That's where you can like, follow, subscribe, share, comment. CuriousRealm.com. CuriousRealm.com/store is where you can go to get all of not only Daniel's books, but all of the books from our guests. When we come back from this quick break, we will be joined by our good friend, Joshua Shapiro. We will be talking about crystal skulls, their energies, their information, how this data has been passed down through millennia to us now, and what we can do with it. We will come back with our conversation with Joshua Shapiro right after this.
The Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that short break. Thank you so much for staying tuned. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially WebWorks Wireless. WebWorks Wireless is your source for no data limit, no throttling, no credit check internet. If you are out there on the go, if you have a camp, if you have a trailer, if you are a traveling technician like myself and looking for a means by which to regularly live stream, I have benchmarked this product all across the country. I have never had a drop in service. I have been able to live stream just about any. I could literally go out as long as I have cell phone signal and live stream a Bigfoot expedition from the middle of the woods, man. That's how rock solid dependable this stuff is. Stop on by and check them out. WebWorksWireless.com is the website that you want to go to, everybody. High speed internet for all is what they are about. Stop on by and check them out. Thank you so much to WebWorks Wireless. They have been our friends since the very beginning here at Curious Realm, providing all of our live streams to our website as well as our live streams whenever we're on location. Our guest in this segment is Joshua Shapiro. Joshua Shapiro is not only one of the founders over at Crystal Skull Explorers, but also one of the founders of the Center for the Advancement of Humanity. We will be talking with Joshua tonight about the world of crystal skulls. I myself have a crystal skull from Joshua. This is my Geronimo Jr. that I got from him. It sits right here on my desk with its friend. Actually, it's two friends. I've got a tiny travel skull that I travel with as well. Anybody who knows me or who watches the show knows, I mean, I'm typically broadcasting with a crystal in my hand. I rarely travel without one in my pocket, Joshua. I am a huge believer in the healing and grounding potential and power of crystals and what they can do. And especially when it comes to the programmability of crystals and the knowledge that they can hold. It's pretty amazing once you start getting into the qualities of quartz crystal. What is it that brought you into the world of crystal skulls to begin with? What brought you to researching crystal skulls, Joshua?
Well, it was back in 1983. I had just come out with a book, not my crystal skull book, Journeys of an Aquarian Age Networker. And I had made contact with a lady, Francois, who had a metaphysical bookstore. And so she actually put my book out in front, in the window in the front of the store. And so one time I was just going back to see if she needed more copies of the book. And she took out pictures of this amethyst crystal skull. And so as I was looking at it, I was responding to the image, which if you scroll up on my page there a little bit more, no, scroll up, there is the amethyst skull on the cover of the book you just passed. You come back down right there, that one right there. That was the one I met. First, I saw a picture of it, and just from the picture, I had this tremendous response. I was like vibrating inside, and I start hearing the skull talking to me and saying, hey, you know, we're coming back to help humanity create peace. So when you have an experience like that, especially if you're an Aries like I am, my birthday was just two days ago, you have to get the answer to this. This is a mystery. This is unbelievable. So I had a chance to see the skull and work with it. And then all of a sudden, as years passed, many other skulls came up. And, you know, they were having an effect on me because of the energies that they hold. But also I've learned, too, that these energies come from some type of living consciousness or spirits that work through them. And if I talk to other people who are like you, Chris, guardians, you know, and ask them, you know, well, what kind of interaction are you having with your skulls? They tell me the same thing. I'm having communication. I'm feeling their energy. I'm getting healing. I'm having dreams. I'm using them in my spiritual work to enhance my work. So it's like they become a very key tool to help people to become more of who we truly are, which is divine children of God. So, and plus for me as an Aries, I always have all these great adventures and experiences that come up in strange and different ways I never know. And I need that because if I don't have such things, I get bored.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I can fully appreciate. I don't meditate as much as I used to, but once again, I am rarely more than 2 to 3 steps away from a crystal. You know how people say like you're never more than 10 feet away from a spider. I'm closer to a crystal than I am to a spider on the daily, on the regular. And I have been that way probably since about 7th or 8th grade. Not here, but in my collection out front, I've got a massive collection of rocks and minerals, and square center in my quartz display is the first piece of quartz that I ever found. It's a beautiful point, that I found just walking home from school. And there was something about it when I picked it up, that resonated through me. And it, for years, this is how I have purchased rocks and minerals. If I don't care how pretty it is, I don't care how nice of a piece or specimen of a mineral it is. If it does not resonate through me and ring me like a bell like that, I have no interest. I have no want for it to be around me. Every one of these are my friends. And even my Geronimo that I got from you. You sent me numerous pictures of not only this Geronimo, but other twins of it that were made at the same time by the same crafter. And, none of them really resonated with me except this one. And you've sent me, you know, skulls since then that I've been like, man, I wish that one spoke to me, cause it's a beautiful piece. But yeah, right. I'm just one of those. If I don't feel it tickle me in my belly, I'm not going to be moved to it. Now, before your experience with the amethyst skull that inspired these books and this journey in your life, were you that way beforehand? Was it the fact that whenever you picked up a rock or a mineral that, it rang you like a bell or vibrated you like that, Joshua?
No, not at all. I really, it's very strange. The last 3 major relationships I've had have been with women who are earth signs, all 3 of them, okay, different ones, because I have no earth in my astrological chart. So it's like only some aspects of nature touch me, but I was never into stones. Even now, I have an affinity for a few stones, like quartz crystal, lapis lazuli, the rabbi, which is one of the crystal skulls we have, which if you go on our website and go on About Us, you'll see a section called, what is it called? The Crystal Kids, the personal skulls. You'll see the rabbi there. You'll see Geronimo Golden Eagle there, which is based on your skull, Portal de Luz.
It's a fantastic new site.
There. Yeah. So I'm connected to my personal skull. They communicate with me. And, you know, at different times, some of them might say, and they call me dad, they say, Dad, you need to work with me now, or you need this skull to help this person now, or whatever. So, and the other thing that's been happening to me is when Katrina was around, she was connected to all of them. And so I didn't really worry about, you know, working with them or was I supposed to do something. But now that I'm the main guy, I've been taking out the dragon skulls that she had, which aren't on the website. That's the rabbi there. And also we have two kind of what are called Mongolian skulls, which don't have a human-looking face, like Tchoula, or we have another one, which is, I can't remember the name. This is the problem at 69. You start losing your memory of names. So Tchoula is there. That's the one of the Mongolian. But we have another one. Winema is the other one, which means female chief. I don't think he's on the website.
And Leilani as well.
Yeah, King Leilani is an ET-type skull. So that one I was gifted when I was speaker. I was the MC of a crystal skull conference in England. I think it was in Glastonbury. The coordinator gifted me that one. And I actually had a vision I was going to get one of these.
Beautiful.
This one was made by a Chinese carver. And now there's a lot of different carvers that are making an ET-shaped skull. Like, if you come back to me, I'll show you the one that's being done by our Indian carver, which I'm going to be getting a whole bunch more of these coming. Let's see.
Yeah. Like that's that. Great.
So there's a bunch more coming and more Geronimo Juniors like what you have. This is what the Indian carver does. What I've been totally amazed is since the end of December, like the month after Katrina passed, almost nonstop, I have so many people that are either asking me to get a skull made from them or from this Indian carver, or they're interested in the ones that I'm getting. So it's like almost all of them go within a few months. I mean, I think
That's fantastic.
10-day period, I sold five, which is very unusual. So it could be because the vibrational frequency of our planet is getting higher and higher, and people are getting more in touch with their, you know, spiritual aspect. People are being drawn to have these tools to help them to awaken to who they are inwardly. So, you know, but for me, having worked with them now for, you know, I've been involved since 1983, since I saw the amethyst skull. So that's over 40 years.
Wow.
Most of my skulls, I don't necessarily need to have them like right by me to get the energy. I can think about them and I can immediately be in touch with them or sense their energy. And also, too, there was a time where I saw the Mitchell Hedges skull. Right around the time when the Indiana Jones film was coming out, which would have been 2008, I believe, I spent 20 minutes meditating with it, and it seemed to totally shift my energy, and I felt the presence. This is opposite to the way you see me, but on my right side, up in the air in the room, like the Mitchell Hedges skull opened up this dimensional door, and these very advanced beings came in. It was a group of them. And they seem to know everything about me. I still don't know who they were or why they were there, where they came from. But my energy shifted. I'm more peaceful, more calm, not so judgmental, you know, just accepting people the way they are and being a real peacemaker. And I find – oh, and I just thought of an interesting story to tell you, not related
to crystals,
But let me finish on this one, and I'm going to come to it. You know, so it just kind of shifted me. And I think as a result of being peaceful, I really don't have very much pressure on me, even though I do feel grief at times with Katrina passing. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, she's always here right next to me in spirit.
Yeah.
So
still helping you charge. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like we're still working together. Yeah, yeah. It's just she's not here physically for me to hug her and have an argument with her Capricorn and Aries. There's no argument between us now because she's like an angel. She's in heaven. And she hears everything I think and everything I feel, and it's all okay. She even hears the stuff that I was afraid to tell her when she was alive. She goes, ah, that's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, just be happy. Be yourself.
That's
Don't
beautiful.
Worry. Everything's going to work out.
And I did not mean to interrupt you a moment ago when you were responding to her as she spoke to you just a moment ago. And that is beautiful to know that your relationship with and through these skulls still continues. That the work that she had and the mission that she had to bless and to charge these skulls is still continuing, even though she is now one with the universe. That's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, Joshua.
Right, because I call it the Katrina boost. Mm. I just hold it in my right hand and say, okay, Katrina, and I can actually feel her like merge with me. And then there's all this energy that starts coming in, and it's the gift to give to the person who's going to receive this go. Wow. Or like at my birthday party, she said, you know, you have all those crystals for me and they're sitting around doing nothing. Offer them to your guest as a gift. Mm. So I did. And each one found something. And then two of my friends said, no, these ones here, you don't want to ever get rid of them. Okay. These are special. Yeah. Hold on to them. So I put that back separate, but I still have more crystals. Oh, I should do it at the next talk. Okay. So I have a talk I have to give in Winter Haven, Florida at Moon Dreams, in case you have any listeners that are by there, on the 26th from 7 to 9, April 26th, 2-hour crystal skull class. So she said I should do the same for the people who come. It's awesome. Just offer her crystals and let people pick them.
That's beautiful. And you know, let's start getting in, especially – speaking of messages, let's start getting into a couple of the messages that you have received over the many, many years working with these skulls. Because once again, you have a whole family of skulls that you work with, a whole family of skulls that your skulls are not only modeled after, but charged with. What are some of the messages that have been revealed unto you over your many years working with these sacred crystals, Joshua?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you this little story first because it was a message that I got, and then we'll transit into the skull.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So about a week or so ago, this is my greatest fear. Without Katrina, who was a great cook, I have to try to figure out what to eat, and I'm a lazy Aries. I don't like to cook. I'm always going to make simple meals. So I have either my microwave, my air fryer, or my toaster oven to use to make my foods. And I've just figured out a way how to eat basically vegetarian. But I'm always concerned that I may eat something, you know, which isn't so good for me. So I must have done that. So I had this pain on my left side, like by my stomach. I don't know what it was. It took about 3 days before it went away. I think it was like gas too that was stuck or whatever. So on the Sunday, which was one of those days, apparently someone or something or some being, because I don't know how this happened, put a $10 and a $1 on my windshield of my car on my right side. Since I was in bed, I didn't see this happen on Sunday, but my roommate, Paul, he did, and it just stayed there. And then on Monday, he said, do you know about the money on your windshield? I saw it yesterday. And I went, what are you talking about? He said, go out there and see. So I went out there, and there was this $11. Now, the strange thing about this is other than Katrina's son, who lives 3 blocks from where I am, he's the only one that knows I live here. Okay. Huh. So I texted him. He said, no, I did not put any money on your car windshield. So where did it come from? Who put it there? But let's look at the message first before I start to postulate what this is. So 11 is a master number. any multiple of 11 is considered a master number. So that means it's a good sign. Okay. Whatever it is, it's a good sign. I don't know if because it was money means prosperity with that, because that's what's been happening to me. Like even today, I had another friend that couldn't say a birthday greeting to me. So she sent me money on PayPal as a gift. What is this? Every day almost, this money's coming in. I'm not used to it. I'm not complaining. Like when the $11 came and I told my roommates to go, if you don't want it, we'll take it. No, I had to keep it because it was a gift from someone.
From something in the universe.
Right. So I have a friend, Gabby, who lives in Vancouver Island, and she's Hungarian. So she said, she sent me a link to some webpage that said, these master numbers are connected to angels. This could be an angelic message. Huh. So we have all kinds of theories about, did Katrina manifest it on the windshield? I don't know. She won't tell me. Okay. And she doesn't say anything about it. Was it? No, I don't know. I'm assuming most of your listeners know about the undeclared war that's going on behind the scenes between the light and the dark. Could this be from the light side? Yeah. A sign saying, Joshua, we know what you're doing and we approve of it. And you're going in the right way or you're on the right side because the money was on the right side. Could it be some other spirits that manifest? I have no idea.
The 11 is a random number.
It's a master number.
Most definitely. Number. Like when it comes to numerology, it's huge, but it's one of those like, why $11?
Right. Or it's a one and a one. I don't know, but it's a positive. It was just a positive sign for me that I'm doing the epic. Right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And precisely, you know, and that's just it. If you start to look around, you would be surprised the signs that you see in your life. You would be surprised the things that are there in those small, still moments, not the huge, grandiose ones. And that's just it. When it comes to even picking up the subtleties of a rock or a mineral, picking up the subtle vibrations, picking up the subtle energies from a crystal skull, that takes something. And it takes something to be able to interpret that message for you as well.
All right, so now let me go on to your real question.
Yeah, the messages.
What messages have I received from the skulls? Because apparently one of my gifts is telepathy. And after Katrina passed, and she's around me, all of my gifts have enhanced my telepathy. I'm hearing messages much more clear. It's not just on the right side from her. I'm getting messages from the left, too. From some other beings, things just come. Like even probably throughout this interview, there's going to be certain things I'm just going to hear somebody's going to say, oh, you should talk about that. And it will remind me of something like the $11 somebody whispered I should speak about it. So the first key message from a crystal skull I received was the amethyst skull that we saw, where it was saying, we are returning, meaning the collective set of crystal skulls all over the world, and we're going to help humanity to create peace. So this is why I believe that the main task that they have right now when they're with their particular guardians like you and I, and there are many other guardians, is to enhance our spiritual gifts, is to enhance our clarity about what might be our mission in life that we came here to do, how to work together, what projects should we be working on to help humanity see peace. So this is kind of like the key message that I receive from them. Another thing is a message from the skulls that their size does not matter. It could be the material it's made from, it could be the shape, or it could be that for a specific person who becomes the guardian, the spirit that's going to work through the skulls, that's the perfect crystal skull vibrationally and from its material for that spirit or a living consciousness to work through to help the person. So there really isn't. So from these messages, what I've learned is, while I might be able, let's say, to help a person who's a new guardian that's getting their first skull, and a lot of times when somebody actually acquires a skull through me, it's the first skull they've ever had before. Or I have one young man in Canada who said, Joshua, I want a Geronimo Jr. because you're working with it. I really love the work you're doing with the skulls, and I honor you. And it would be so wonderful for me to have a skull that you've worked with and it is connected to your collection. So there's just different circumstances. The other thing that I received from the skull was that they kind of like mirror back to us aspects of who we are that we may not see. So like when you meditate with your skull, you may learn you have some creative gifts or special abilities you didn't know you had, or they may enhance your dreams. So they affect people in different ways, but really what they're trying to do is to mirror back to people the true essence of who we are. Because the other key I would say from the skulls is the society we brought up in, it tries to constrict us to be limited, that we can only be a person in certain ways. There are only certain things we can do that are so-called okay. Now, for me as an Aries, this is abhorrent. Freedom is the key for who I am.
Yeah.
And I am free right now. I mean, you know, I could sit here all day and do nothing and I would be fine. I could take it easy. Or I could say, no, I don't want to do that. What could I do to help somebody? Or can I write a new book?
As long as the choice is yours, you're happy.
Right. So I have that freedom of choice.
Yeah.
But also the other part of the freedom for me is to be able to experience whatever it is I wish to experience. Okay. Because there's a part of me that's a rebel. Like, for example, I believe, and I have no clue, it's like I don't have really any signs right now. It's driving me crazy. I know I'm going to have a new family, okay, somehow, okay? But I believe that family will not be a traditional family. I don't know what that means. I believe, too, that there's going to be very advanced devices which are sitting behind the scenes, which the people who think they are in charge, they've been preventing them from being shared with us, like something called a med bed, which in the movie Elysium, they totally showed what that device does, you know, connected to a computer, go into a chamber, and then it looks vibrationally at your frequency and it corrects everything. So, but it also can take back years in your age, like 30 years. So Spirit is telling me, yes, you're going to have a new family and you're going to have your own kids finally, because of my four wives, I didn't have any children. Never. So it's like there's a new life coming. So sometimes you can get a message from the crystal skulls about what's your future, what are aspects of yourself that you haven't seen before. You know, so it's kind of like a living computer, I would say. And just depends upon which spiritual gifts you have. Like I have telepathy and I feel the energy and I'm able to interpret those two things together. Yeah. My vision is not great. In other words, if I see something in my mind's eye, it's in grayscale. I don't see colors. I don't see detail. Mm-hmm. I can feel and look at it and kind of know what I'm seeing. Okay. But, Oh, are you supposed to tell them that? All right. Well, she said I could tell you this experience.
Okay.
So I was visiting. I always have all these stories, Chris, you know.
Thank you, Katrina.
Yes, they're never ending. So I was at these friends' house. They were at my birthday, not this year, but last year. We went to a place where you could pick whatever food you want. I think it was a Chinese place. So Lewis and Constance came. And then also, of course, my friend Phil and Ann came too. And then they just came to my birthday party on Wednesday this week too. They were both there. And I've known them for like 20 years. They have more crystal skulls than I do. So I went to finally, after almost a year of knowing them, I went to their home where they have a spiritual center and a great story how they got the property and how spirits manifesting. So I'm sitting talking to Constance and I'm showing her some of my skulls. She really likes crystals. She's kind of like you in a way. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see Katrina. But I really, it's almost like I can almost see her manifesting back in the physical, where she's very young, and she was kind of like kneeling on the floor. And it was like, and then I heard her say, if you could see that, your vision is coming sooner than you think, buddy. So she calls me by, you know, the old names, buddy, you know, or sometimes when I'm being crazy or foolish, she'll call me other names, but... That was a pretty amazing experience. So the crystal skulls were there, and I was talking to Constance, and then all of a sudden, I could almost see her doing that, you know. So it was more clear than normally I would see. Well, so, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen to you when you meet these crystal skulls. They can give you messages. They can enhance your gifts. Or they can do like what the Mitchell Hedges skull did, that experience I told you where these beings came and everything. It could totally change your life, just change your whole frequency of energy.
Absolutely. And, you know, I popped up an article a second ago that I'll pop back up in just a second. But you mentioned the Mitchell Hedges skull, and this has to do with that. Because, of course, one of the purported things forever with the Mitchell Hedges skull was that it was sent to Bell Labs. And the Bell Labs did research on it,
it was Hewlett-Packard.
Hewlett-Packard, you're correct. And that they did all kinds of research on it, including the fact that, you know, that is where a lot of the discovery of piezoelectricity came from, about the fact that, you know, a lot of what we power small devices with, folks, is literally small wafers of crystal mashed between two pieces of metal that, whenever they're struck, creates a small electrovoltaic charge. This is where piezo buzzers come from. Whenever you hear like that annoying meh, meh of an alarm, that's a piezo buzzer. That is a speaker made out of a slice of crystal, attached to a piece of metal. Yes, it is absolutely shown that quartz can store data. I've got ZME Science up on screen right now with the article headline, "This small quartz disc can store a 360 byte or terabyte of data forever." And of course, that's one of the things, is even an SD card is deprecable. Even a CD, DVD, because of the fact that that is a burned on media. Eventually the inks and dyes in that the ones and zeros are burned into as little tiny pinprick holes can deprecate, and you can lose data. This is quite literally a tiny wafer of quartz, no bigger than a quarter, that can store data for as long as 13.8 billion years at temperatures up to 190 degrees Celsius without losing the data. 360 terabytes of data could fit on that. I will now bring up, out of science.org, Superman memory crystals could store humanity's data indefinitely, talking about the exact same thing. And here is the actual Scientific American article about the crystals and how they work. And yes, quartz crystals do amazing things. So yeah, the fact that there is data stored there, or the fact that it could be used as a conduit to data. Not too long ago, my wife, I think it was at swim class with my kid. Some of the moms were talking about, you know, her woo-woo friend who was all into crystals and, you know, said all these crystals had all these powers. And I was like, next time she mentions something like that about her woo-woo friend and the crystals, ask her how much she likes her cell phone that is charged with lithium ion crystals, that uses a liquid crystal display to show her information, that uses quartz crystals and silicon crystals to create the data, as like 3/4 of the technology in that phone is crystal based. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, like the crystals literally run our life on the daily, Joshua, on the daily.
Yeah. I mean, all the devices we're using right now to make this show has crystal in it. So
yeah,
where would we be without it?
Yeah, no, precisely.
And the other thing is where did it come from? Where was it inspired? The crashed UFOs. They found it in there and they were able to duplicate it.
Well,
to go from vacuum tubes that the computers had until these, you know,
using germanium.
Right. So now we have, you know, little phones, MP3 players,
yeah,
whatever it is, and they can do all these incredible things.
Well, so. And that's just it. Without the vibrational qualities of rocks and minerals, be it copper or gold, what have you, we would not have the electronics that we have today. We wouldn't. Yeah. And it really bears to witness and question, one of the things we talk about regularly on the show, Joshua, is the rapidity with which humanity forgets. Mm-hmm. You know, we now live in a day and age where homes can be 3D printed. Things can be made on the fly, on the spot. Like three quarters of the tools that they now use on the space station are made on the space station. Mm-hmm. They do not fly them up anymore. It's a waste of energy. It's better to make them on the spot, purpose made. And it's remarkable to see that. And to know that, you know, about 80 years ago, not even, probably about 50 years ago, within my lifetime, you could have probably taken a 6x6 plank of wood to somebody and said, I need a spiral column carved, and gotten a few quotes. Now you would be hard pressed to find somebody that has the knowledge on how to carve a spiral column out of a piece of wood. And that is something that humanity has been doing for thousands of years. That is how fast we forget. So to think that this crystal I'm holding in my hand at one point could have been used the exact same way as this solid state hard drive I'm holding in my other hand is not that far of a leap. It's not that far of a leap to think that maybe with this discovery of 360 terabytes of data on a slice of quartz thinner than a quarter, is a recovered technology, a technology that we have used before and long, long, long forgotten. You know, you take this hard drive that has tons of schematics. Like, I could rebuild humanity. I could build computers with the schematics that are on here. You take that, throw it out on the beach, and let somebody find it in 20, 30 years. Let's see if they know how to access the data or if the data is still good.
Right.
You know?
Right. And I think that the crystal skulls, too, also were used by ancient civilizations in the same way, but much more advanced than even, you know, what you were talking about. What could the crystal skulls have encoded inside of them? Because I don't think, other than working with a person who's sensitive, you know, to spiritual energy, have we a technology yet that we could attach it to a crystal skull and all the history of humanity that it has been stored or programmed into it would be made available to us.
And you know, especially when you are talking about something like this, which, you know, yes, now many people use for decoration in their home, things like that. You can buy them made out of poured glass, all kinds of stuff, Joshua.
Right.
Now, in an ancient society, when you're talking, somebody with the knowledge to make this and to craft this, had a very ancient knowledge that had been passed down person to person. And when you're talking even about the meditation that somebody does with a crystal, the personality that they can pour into a crystal just by carrying it with them. Now imagine what that artisan is thinking about. The past of their civilization, the culmination of their civilization from small critters to where he is carving that piece of quartz, all of that is being imbued into that as he's creating it. So it's no different than taking this crystal, washing it, and putting it outside during the eclipse to program it with an antenna. No different. than any way that somebody programs a crystal with intent to help ground them, to help them with creativity, what have you. The same way that you can do that, that object would be imbued with every bit of, and I personally think that's why there is that overwhelming vibration and literally like, I wouldn't even say it's a bell ring. It's more of a kick to the gut almost of love and peace and understanding. And I think that it's because without that love, without that tenderness, without that care and that understanding and that attention to personal detail in life and quidate while they were carving this rock, it would be destroyed in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's why I think that they resonate in a totally different way than the raw piece of quartz that they are made from.
Well, I think it's the shape, and also too, it's similar for us as human beings. We have this skull shape that protects our brain, but I think it's that shape that was created by a higher, more evolved spirit that created humanity's form that we have now, that knew that with the bone skull in that shape, we would be able to receive a lot of knowledge from the universe. Because according to Marcel Vogel, who was a very good scientist and worked with all kinds of crystals, he said that if a person holds a crystal on their hand, the quartz resonates with the vibrational frequency. There's a similar frequency with the bones in the body. So, of course, the skull is made from bone. So it just means that the bone in the human body, too, is able to hold in these same frequencies, these same kind of energies like crystals. So when you're working with an activated crystal, it's going to activate your entire body because you have bone everywhere in your body.
Yeah. And, you know, in addition to that is the fact that, you know, our brains and our skulls themselves act as a resonant chamber, like the actual dimensions of it are like create a standing resonant wave, you know, and to think about that when you're thinking about transduction through a crystal, something like that, especially size, capacity, everything else making a difference in that wave. It everything aligns and makes a whole lot of sense at that point as to why these shapes and why these skulls. And there have been crystal skulls found numerous places, not just Mesoamerica. So even the motif is interesting in its continuance across humanity.
That's true. There was Marion Bradley Zimmer. I can't remember the name of her book. Oh, it was called House Between the Worlds. Katrina just told me because she loved this author. In that book, and of course she's known for the other book about something to do with Camelot or that kind of thing. She said that when we have a crystal, it's the only material that exists in our world that exists as a crystal in other dimensions. This was her preference in the book. And I never forgot, even though it was a fictional story, I never forgot that. So I kind of think that crystals were gifted to the earth and to humanity, which allowed us to have contact with other intelligences, other frequencies of energy, wisdom, knowledge. So, you know, that somebody would take that specific type of material and put it into a skull shape, like a crystal skull. I think it's a double enhancement of the power to be able to hold and to receive incredible knowledge and information. And I think that as we go forward and as we have these advanced technologies that have been withheld from us, we'll be able to access all this information these crystals have been storing and holding, which could totally help humanity and enhance humanity. So it's not just the energy we receive. it'll also be the knowledge encoded inside of it. Like I think with the Mitchell Hedges Go, which I believe was created in Atlantis, they put all kinds of incredible knowledge and information into that SCO. And, you know, we haven't really even been able to get close to accessing what it could possibly contain.
And you know, I am a big believer in ancient technologies, Joshua. I am a big believer, and don't get me wrong, I'm a believer that there is a large, you know, hominid species roaming the forests of North America and beyond. Mm-hmm. I'm a believer that there are extra-dimensional and extraterrestrial beings in this universe. But I don't think that they were necessary to build the pyramids. I think that, you know, we have many times over forgotten the technologies of humanity from Atlantis to now that, yes, would have been considered even by modern standards, magical in the way that they utilized frequency and the way that they understood frequency and the way that that interacted with the world around them, you know, and the way that these very basic technologies are hugely advanced in their own way. You know, and we are just burgeoning on a lot of this now. Even now, despite what we know, we cannot duplicate the construction of the pyramids in a scale amount of time. We cannot create a scale-sized pyramid in a scaled-back amount of time. So it's like if it took them 85 years to build the pyramids, we cannot build one in a third the amount of time that's a third the size using the exact same construction techniques that we claim. And it's interesting to see that. It's interesting to know that we are constantly rediscovering old technologies. We've just now in the last year figured out how Roman concrete was made. In the last year. So right. Like we to think that an ancient civilization could not carve quartz like this, could not figure out the hardness value of rocks and minerals, even though they were regularly napping flint, even though they were regularly napping quartz to make arrowheads, they couldn't figure out how to work it finer, that they couldn't figure out how to polish it smooth. I don't think so. I think that they perfectly had that knowledge and that ability to be able to do so, to be able to work this stone in that way without cracking, chipping, breaking it. It's understanding grain. It's understanding the way that a crystal is structured. And a lot of that is observation and seeing it. You know, modern jewelers know a lot, but they depend, much like any modern bricklayer, on technology and techniques that have been around for thousands of years, unchanged almost.
Yep,
because absolutely. They work.
Absolutely. So where should we go next with crystal skulls? Should I show some other ones?
I was going to say, we have about 10 minutes left. Let's start getting into some of the new skulls that you have. Let's start getting into some of the new friends that you have available for folk.
Well, I only have one other one besides that ET one that's a little different. So this would be like an example of a clear quartz done as a Geronimo Jr.
Okay.
And then there are some other ones I got sent that are not quartz. They're different materials, but unfortunately they're not accessible right now. They're in their boxes. But people can contact me. I have pictures and video of all the different ones that are available. And so it's all coming from this carver in India. He's very accurate. The people that I've been sending the skulls to, they've been very happy with them. And like I said, Katrina does a boost on them too. And they also work too with very high quality quartz. So
I can attest to that. I love my Geronimo. My Geronimo literally sits right here on the left side of me with a light underneath it, while my Anaja skull sits. It's a triumvirate on my desk between the three of them.
Yeah, so if you come back to this clear quartz,
That's how clear it is.
Yeah,
literally, that's how clear it is. It just vanishes in the green screen in the background. It's great. No,
but it's quite clear. It's very expensive and very hard to find crystal clear quartz that's clear like this.
Yeah, there is not a lot. And I can show you an example here, folks. This is an average crystal skull that you may find, you know, ever. You can see a few inclusions in there of a little bit of agate. That kind of stuff. That's what you will find in a typical crystal skull. You may see a few things like that inside of it. Even my small one has things like that. However, my Geronimo is like crystal clear. It is.
Yeah, but Katrina is saying, though, a lot of that has to do with you, Chris, because you've had it now for how long? About a year, I think?
Geronimo? For at least a couple years. If not, actually, this was purchased back in the days of Dudes and Beer. So that was at least 2 years ago.
Right. So I think part of the clarity of your skull has to do with you. Working with you, being around you, interacting with your energy. It's clarified it. I just wanted to show people, you had shown pictures of this one, but this is the original Geronimo, which all the other ones have come from.
Awesome.
And the reason we made Geronimo Juniors is because when we were taking Geronimo Golden Eagle Eye, people were just like, we love that skull. So we thought, well, maybe people would like to have a junior of it.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you that since we started this first with the Indian, not the Indian, but the Chinese carvers, and then we moved to an Indian carver, there's probably been like over 100 of these Geronimo Juniors that have been created since we started that process. These are some of the ones the Chinese carvers made for us. So they can be made of the original smoky quartz that Geronimo Golden Eagle Eye came in. They can be clear quartz, rose quartz. There's a friend of mine who just asked for black tourmaline.
That's
going to start to be worked on probably in the next week. So that'll be the first one I'll be offering to somebody, black tourmaline. So, or a person could say, I like it, but I want to have it in a different material. And I just ask the carver and they do it. Another thing I want to mention before we end.
Sure.
Is I offer 9 free ebooks.
Yes.
These ebooks are on a number of subjects. Of course, we have one on crystal skulls, but also 2 on there's one on UFOs. There's one on Tartaria, which is an advanced civilization. Many people are beginning to believe existed only 200 some years ago. I know it's hard to believe it totally makes our history get thrown out, but I believe that most things we were taught in school, we're not taught.
There's
the truth
a lot
about.
Of history we should throw out.
Yes, exactly. So Tartaria seems to be a key to support that. And there is physical evidence through buildings that have been left over of its existence. And I found in St. Augustine, which is supposed to be the oldest city in the United States, that inside the downtown area are still towers with antennas. They got rid of some of them because I saw a picture on the internet in the early 1900s compared to today. Huh. So they destroyed some of those towers. And there's a fort in the – I don't know if it's the ocean, the beach. There's a fort there that looks very similar to the design of what are called star forts in Europe.
Oh, wow.
So – and I think, too, when I go through on Highway I-4 – downtown Orlando, I think there's a couple of buildings I see, maybe even some buildings linked to these entertainment groups like Disney World and Universal Studios that are using. There's something about those buildings as I'm going on the highway, I'm seeing those kind of look like what I've seen other Tartarian buildings. So I'm pretty sure here in Florida there are some. It's just I haven't been able to travel everywhere. I really only know Orlando area. Yeah. And Tampa, now I'm starting to learn, and south of St. Augustine, because Katrina's family has some condominiums up there that are on the beach that we get to stay at when they're not being rented out. So, so I really like the energy of Florida. But anyway, so we have like Tartaria, crystal skulls, UFO messages from Argus, which is two of my profound experiences that I've had that show me the future and why I absolutely believe that there is absolutely nothing that's going to stop paradise happening on planet Earth. According to Argus, who's this future me that I'm going to become, 2037 to 2040 is when I think that we're going to see the or all the changes that are coming, all the new technologies, the contact with the galactics, total peace on Earth, all these wonderful things. Will be here completely manifested. That's what I receive.
We are quite literally ripe for a whole new world right now of technology, exactly. Joshua.
Right. So. And if you really look at it, almost all of our systems are falling out of place. They're not functioning anymore. We can't trust them. So a lot of people feel, and I feel this too, before the end of this year, major changes coming. Okay, a lot of what's happening now is the end of the old world. Yeah. You know, like all this madness that's happening now in the Middle East between Iran and Israel. These are all movies.
We've got a lot of old paradigms of humanity to shake off. Period. Right. As the dog of humanity and the fleas that those are.
Right. Like there was somebody who said on Telegram. And I asked some questions. So I asked this as a question to my friends. Why do we really invade when George Bush was president? It was Iraq, right? And everybody thinks, oh, because, you know, they had the nuclear weapons. No, it was the Stargate that's there.
That is a huge theory out there. Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Yeah, so, we have you for about another 2-3 minutes before we let you go. Let's let everybody know one last time where they can go to get a hold of you to order Crystal Skulls, where they can go to get ebooks, and where they can go if they're in the Florida area for your upcoming workshops, Joshua.
Okay, sure. So the best way to reach me is through my email, which is crystalskullexplorers@gmail.com. So it's kind of like you see for the website, but it's at gmail.com. And the website is cse.crystalskullexplorers.com. So that's also how you can find me or get the free ebook on crystal skulls or some of the other books that I've written that have crystal skulls in them. For the crystal skulls themselves, I don't really have a page on my website that accurately shows what I'm doing now. So it's really good if you go to this page that's there just to see an example of what the Geronimo Juniors look like, but you really need to send me an email, and I have pictures and video of all the ones that I have available to see, just like what Chris described, if one of them speaks to you.
Yep.
And then we can discuss, you know, how to do the payment plan, whatever. I'm totally willing to work it out if the skull is supposed to come to you. As far as what I have coming up, the only public event that I have scheduled so far, although I'm constantly working on other ones, I have two things I know for sure. So April 26th, Winter Haven in Florida, which is south of Orlando at Moon Dreams. I'm going to be doing a 2-hour crystal skull talk from 7 to 9. That's a Friday evening. So that would be a week from today.
Okay.
And then at the end of June, 29th and 30th, 29th, I'll be doing a 5-hour workshop at a center called A Mystical Sense, and I don't know how to pronounce the city. It's an Indian name. It's like Tono No Sasa. It's northeast of Tampa. So again, you can contact me. I have a flyer for it if you want, for both of them. I'm doing a 5-hour workshop on the Saturday and then the private sessions where we sit with my crystal kids and I do an intuitive session and you pick one to hold. I just did a couple at that center near Tampa and everybody was happy. So even though I got slightly diminished by my grief with Katrina, my gifts are very strong and back and very accurate. And she participates in the session too. I heard her, like there was a lady who had problems with the husband and she was giving me all this stuff to say to her. How would I know that? I'm not a woman. What do I say? But I was hearing.
Well,
so, you know, it's really good. So those are the things we have coming up. But again, the email crystalskullexplorers@gmail.com. If you contact me there, I can give you information. I can give you direct links to all the free ebooks. You know, we can get connected on Zoom. I have a Zoom room if you want to talk. I'm going out and finding soul family and bringing us together because we got projects to do, baby. And that's stuff right. is coming up soon, and we need to be there. So, Chris, thank you again so much for having me on the show. You're one of my best brothers, and you're one of the greatest interviewers I know.
Thank you, my friend. It's always great chatting with you. I am so glad to hear that you are doing well amidst all the madness in the world, especially amidst all the madness in your life as of recently. And I'm so glad to hear that you are in touch with Katrina regularly. She is such a blessing to you and to the world. So thank you so much. Please do hold the line while we close things out with the audience real quick, Joshua. While you are online checking out CSE.crystalexplorers.com, the official website of Joshua Shapiro and Crystal Explorers. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can like, follow, subscribe, share, comment. That is where you can go to CuriousRealm.com/videos and actively follow all of the YouTube channels of not only us, but our guests as well. You can also, while you're there, visit CuriousRealm.com/store to pick up not only Joshua's books, but all of the books from our guests also. And don't forget, if you are a Roku user, we officially have our own Roku channel now. Stop on by and download that free Roku app inside of your Roku device, and you will get not only all of the content from our episodes, but you will also get tons and tons of absolutely free binaural beat music made by me. So stop on by and check that out. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. As always, it is your open hearts, your open minds that make the conversation possible. And without that, humanity does not march forward. So remember to take care of yourselves, to take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, as well as KPNL Radio, APR TV, and the Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media and Aftermath Media family of podcasts. For more great shows and members-only content, visit groundzeromedia.org and aftermathmedia.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.